Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaverLife.com, and the stretch of amazing weather continues. In fact, the forecast is like something you'd make up in a dream. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, 72 and sunny. Today, 68 maybe, somewhere in that range, and full sun. Just amazing. Amazing late fall days, and I hope you get a chance to get out and enjoy it. Do some work in the garden, do some biking. Yeah, I mean, it's really September weather right now, and soon to be mid-November. So it's a great chance to make winter feel shorter by getting outside and enjoying this great weather. And it's an ideal time to plant bulbs. The garden centers still have lots of bulbs, and it's perfect time to put those in the ground. Garlic, awesome time to plant that. You have to separate the cloves when you plant it, and you'll have that many bulbs next July when you harvest it. So you might get 6 or 8 cloves to a bulb of garlic. And that means how much was the garlic? I got a bulb from Todd Lighthouse at Lighthouse Gardens at the Brighton Farmers Market. Maybe it was $1. I'm not sure. But anyway, separate that and you're going to end up with 6 to 8 bulbs of garlic next year. And so there is still some local garlic available. Todd had some, and the Brighton Farmers Market's going to continue on Sundays, basically up until the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And then they're going to reduce their hours, but stay outside. So they're not going inside. They're going to stay outside, but rather than being from 9 to 1, starting the Sunday after Thanksgiving, which would be the 29th, it'll be from 10 to 11:30, so just an hour and a half, because it'll be colder then. It's going to be a lot colder than 72. But what a gorgeous day for the Brighton Farmers Market this Sunday. Again, 72 and sunny. Keep in mind they are continuing to keep the 9 to 1, or say 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., the first hour of the market for seniors. And those who are doing pickups, you can order in advance from many of the vendors, and you can do pickups between 9 and 10. Any sort of special needs, etc., that's the first hour of the market, 9 to 10 a.m. So harvest what you can from your garden, and then stock up on everything else from our local farmers. And a number of the farm markets are still open. I was at Sunscape Farms this past Thursday, and they had still cherry tomatoes. These are coming probably from high tunnels, so they were protected from the early frosts. Really beautiful cherry tomatoes. They had Asian pears. They had all kinds of different squashes. They have a surprising selection. Also some larger tomatoes. And again, the high tunnels allow you to grow in the ground. They're essentially greenhouses, but much simpler, cheaper, and not really intended to go all winter, but to extend the season in the fall and in the spring. So they are really hoops of plastic. And the other advantage that they offer is that they keep the rain off of, for example, cherry tomatoes, which tend to split with too much rain. And so they drip irrigate these under these high tunnels. And they also, in this weather, they're going to have to put some fans in there or something. I mean, they also raise the heat, which is what tomatoes and peppers and things need to mature. And so, again, these sort of simple, inexpensive greenhouses extend the season, not just by avoiding the frost, but also just with warmer temperatures. And so surprising number of summer vegetables still available at Sunscape Farms, maybe some of the other farm markets. So let me know, as you are maybe visiting some of them, what you discover. I went in a search. We'll talk some more about it during the Finger Lakes show. But went in search of cider donuts. A couple of people had recommended Cast Isle Cider Mill down near Letchworth, just south of Perry. And that was a lot of fun to visit. Excellent cinnamon fried cake and some wonderful cider. They're only going to stay open through about Thanksgiving. And that's the case with some cider mills. Schutz, they are open year-round, but there are some that are seasonal. So I've been visiting over the last week or so, visiting quite a few cider mills, checking out their cinnamon sugar fried cakes, and I'll let you know in the food show where my favorites are. I thought I had a favorite, and then someone recommended a couple other farms, and now I have two more favorites on my list. So we'll talk about that during the food show this morning. But I was driving down between Perry and Cast Isle, which is about an hour. Perry's about an hour from Rochester. It's just a couple minutes south of Perry. Beautiful time to be down near Letchworth State Park. And I went by a farm which had, at a distance, it looked like piles of potatoes that were as high as a house. 30 feet high, somewhere in that range. Right near the road, it looked like, you know, they'd harvested and, you know, just stacked them there, just loose potatoes. That's what it looked like. I got up close, and it's all rocks, almost. There were some potatoes in it, actually, but obviously they'd been harvesting potatoes, and this is where they dumped the rocks that they picked up as they were harvesting the potatoes. But this pile of rocks was, again, it was about 30 feet high. It was an extended, multiple piles all near each other, maybe a couple hundred feet long, extraordinary number of rocks. And all I could think of was, you know, this is why you build cobblestone houses, because they're all similar size. They weren't maybe as round as some that are usually used in cobblestone houses. But I'm sure you could pick through them and find plenty of fairly round ones. But they were all kind of similar sizes. It was maybe it's the machines that they use to harvest the potatoes kick out the bigger rocks. Maybe there's lots of big rocks too, but these rocks fooled the machine into thinking they were potatoes. And, you know, there were, I could see dozens of potatoes mixed in here and there with probably millions of rocks. This was an extraordinary pile. Weird thing. I mean, I was out there taking photos of it, and I'm sure the farmer, if they saw me, was thinking, oh, you know, why is someone taking photos of rocks? But it was such a big pile. So if you go down to Letchworth, and you know, it's pretty to go down through Perry anyway, and then you should consider going down to Cast Isle and getting some cider and donuts and driving by this pile of rocks. Strange things that attract attention. And I've been out working in the garden, cutting back a few things. I tend to leave most things, as I've been saying over the last several months. Let nature take its course. Just get rid of things that have diseased leaves, or, you know, are falling into walkways, or just, you know, look. You know, I had some amaranth, decorative amaranth, which was gorgeous purple. And these were 7 feet tall. They'd grown extraordinarily tall, but they, you know, the frost had knocked them back, and they were sort of falling over and, you know, wasn't going to leave those. Maybe allow the seed heads for the birds. You know, I could have put those up in a tree or in a bush or something. I did see some sparrows in eating those amaranth seeds at one point. They're very tiny seeds, so not sure they're the best bird food, but you know, that's one of the plants that I was cutting back. Also, sometimes there's some plants that you don't want more of, so some fall clematis just wrapped up blooming. It blooms white, little white flowers, not the big flowers like a regular clematis, but little white flowers. I think it's actually considered an invasive species. Unfortunately, it's a pretty one, so I took it out of my house, but I was helping a friend with it. And you know, the flowers are pretty, but when the flowers are gone, it develops these seeds, and there are maybe three or four seeds where each of the flowers was, maybe even a few more than that. And so at the end of the seeds is sort of a feather, one feather per seed. And it's not really the kind of feather that's going to, you know, let it fly away like a milkweed seed. But the wind would probably pick them up and move them a little bit. And it's sort of a curly feather, white feather. And so each of the seeds where the flower was has one of these. And it kind of looks like a flower at that point. And so I think it's one of the most interesting, one of the most beautiful seed heads around that I've seen. It's gorgeous, especially when there's lots of them. Usually the fall clematis blooms in masses of white. It blooms a long time, too. And then these seed heads, which I don't want more of these clematis, and so reluctantly cut that back, trying to limit the number of new fall clematis that show up. So I don't want to rave about it too much because we really don't need more of these and it becoming more invasive. So beware of the fall clematis. It's tempting because of the flowers, and those seed heads are pretty cool to look at. I'm sure there's some great photos online if you look up fall clematis seeds, and there's got to be some great photos because of these little feathers. Again, sort of an individual feather per seed. And when there's maybe thousands of them and big groups of white flowers that then turn into these seed heads, it does look like it's still blooming in a sense. So I admire them nearby if someone has them. I'm not sure I would buy one just because where I've seen people with fall clematis, and I had one, you end up with more invariably. The seeds germinate, not hundreds or thousands of them, but you know, I planted one fall clematis and ended up with maybe four additional ones, and I still have one that I've got to take out. Just haven't gotten around to it. It doesn't really bloom because it's in a shady spot, but they will climb over everything like a grapevine and really kind of smother things. So generally, clematis doesn't cause these kinds of problems, but the fall clematis does. And so I regret planting it, but I really do kind of like the flowers. So it's a love-hate relationship. But it will be gone, and probably there'll be some additional seeds that germinate at some point that I'll have to get rid of. If you have questions about getting rid of something or pruning it back or whether you can move it, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Send me a photo of it if you don't know what it is. Maybe I can help identify it. And again, with some of those annuals like Cleome, I've got a bunch of those. It's been dropping seeds all summer. I don't need 10,000 more seeds. And so that's being cut back. Probably do that today. I was hoping some of it would flower again over this week of warm weather, but the frost seemed to not quite kill it, but enough that the flower buds that looked like they would open don't seem to be opening. It's kind of odd. They didn't turn black. They're still purple, but they're not opening. And all I can guess is that the base of the plant, the stem, was badly damaged from the frost. And in some cases, the taller part of the plant, in this case, it's about 4 feet, 4 to 5 feet tall. It's a tall cleome. May not have frozen because the cold air sinks. And so near ground level, if it's not windy or if it's not a slope, the cold air sinks and will damage things closer to the ground, with the caveat that the ground was fairly warm when we had that frost, and it seems to have kept one of my begonias alive. So I was shocked that these two little white begonias, which I forgot to bring inside, that they've survived the pretty hard freezes that we've had. And again, the ground provides an insulation layer that goes up a little bit. In the case of these begonias, it appears to be about 3 or 4 inches that was protected, and then the begonia above that was frosted. So you get to sort of a sense of the microclimates in your yard after freezes and frosts, and you see what survives and what didn't survive. Again, some of these begonias amazingly survived. I can't say the same for coleus and some of those other plants. They are completely dead. So look around your yard. In contrast, the geraniums, ordinary geraniums that I have, are doing really well. They didn't get frosted, and they obviously are not going to stay outside this winter. I need to bring them inside, but they're in a big pot. I was debating whether to bring them inside. I think I'll bring in cuttings of them rather than bringing in that big pot again and just grow the cuttings. That also avoids you bringing in some insects and worms, etc., in the potting soil. So I got some new potting soil, and I'll use that to propagate some of these begonias and geraniums. So look around your yard. There may be some surprise things that have survived these freezes and may even be blooming with this warm weather and a few more days of it. And even after that, the long-term forecast is for more seasonable temperatures, in the 50s. 48 to 55 or so for the next week, but it doesn't look like any big freezes or snow is coming. So it really gives us an extended fall. If you protected some things during those freezes, you're reaping those benefits now, because those plants are probably doing pretty well, enjoying this warm weather. And if you need some help identifying plants or figuring out what to do with them, send me a couple of photos, michael@saverlife.com, and get some bulbs. Again, there's a couple ways to go about planting spring bulbs. You can plant them in individual holes, which is, for bigger bulbs like tulips and daffodils, a real pain, because you got to dig down like 6 inches ideally to plant them. If you plant them more shallowly than that, which people usually do because they get tired of digging deep holes, the squirrels are going to get them much more, at least the tulips, much more easily. They probably won't go after your daffodils, but they might disturb them in their hunt for the tulips. But if you dig one big hole, put in 6, 8, 12 bulbs, and then cover it up, and then tamp it down pretty well so that the squirrels can't dig very easily. That's easier to do with a shovel than digging 12 separate holes. And those little bulb planters they make are, I think, relatively useless, mainly because most of our soils around here are not conducive to these bulb planters. If you have clay, those bulb planters are especially useless, and really sandy soil too. It takes ideal soil conditions for those bulb planters to work. So I've really never used one. I stick with the shovel and tend to plant bulbs in groups. So ideal time to put them in the ground. Ideal time to put perennials, many shrubs and trees in the ground. If you're planting evergreen trees at this point, you need to use an anti-desiccant sprayed on the needles so that they don't lose moisture as they try to get their roots established. So dormant trees and shrubs are much better to plant right now. Evergreens really should have gone in a couple of months ago. But again, with anti-desiccant, you can probably make it work. And move some plants. I just cut back the leaves of my hosta that have been knocked over by the cold, the frost. And they're encroaching on my pond. I think I'm going to have to divide these hostas. And now is an ideal time to do that. You can see where they are. They don't have the new growth ready to come out as they will in the spring. And they'll get their roots established this fall, and they'll look much better next year. So I have some better spots for these hosta. They were planted at a time when there was shade in that area, and some hostas can take quite a bit of sun. These two varieties, I don't think, are so happy with the amount of sun they're getting. So I'm going to move them to a shadier spot, give them some more space, and keep them from... I suspect they might even grow through the pond liner at some point. They're that close to the pond. So ideal time of year to divide things like that. And you start to learn more about the root systems of these plants, and you'll discover the hostas are more like a rutabaga that you need to divide. It's not easy to cut those in half or into quarters. And then you'll find some other plants that have very loose, very kind of spindly, surprisingly limited root systems. I mean, the black-eyed Susans really don't have that much of a root system, and I need to move some back into an area where I used to have them. And the contrast between black-eyed Susans and hosta roots is pretty extraordinary. So the black-eyed Susans, I'll cut those down, maybe just allow a few leaves to stay on them and move them into a new spot. And then the hostas, those are going to take some, really, you have to set a flat-bladed spade where you want to divide them and almost jump up and down on that to get it through. Some people sharpen the blades of them, of your shovels, just to try to get through that hosta. If you have a curved blade spade, don't even bother trying to do it. Those are very difficult to divide plants with. You really need a flat-bladed spade to do that dividing work. Again, email me if you have questions, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back with For the Love of Food, Discover the Finger Lakes today. Tomorrow, it's the grapevine, 9 a.m. here at saverlife.com. Have a great day.